Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate House Witches. I am Dorian Wallace, joined as always by my lovely sister Raina Starr.
Hey! What's up, bitches? What a waste. All right. Seriously. Oh, man. I wish Jade was already waiting, but that's all right.
I know, right?
That's okay. Do your shout out, and I'll do the disclaimer, and... Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm going to give my shout out to my cousin Jessica. I'm going to send you a knuckle sandwich and a bag of chips if you're listening, because I just found out that because of school funding, because I'm not sure if many people are aware that Jessica has cerebral palsy, so she's in school like all year round. So for reasons dealing with that, she couldn't come down this time, but hopefully she will be down soon. Anyway, so love you, Jess. Give your disclaimer.
Never mind. All right. So, for those of you who are new to the show, never listened to our show before, our show is not a G, PG, or even an R-rated show. We'd be lucky if we could qualify for an X, but whatever. So if you have anybody who's sensitive to really bad language or subject matters of an extremely mature nature, you may want to get them out of the room, because I am about to fucking launch. Oh, I guess I already started. Anyway, so this has been, okay, aside from all of the death that we've been experiencing, this has been a really crazy couple of weeks. And I know it seems like we say that every week, but seriously, some weird shit's going on, and I don't get it. I'm hoping tonight's guest can navigate us through some of that, because he's good like that. And I am, of course, talking about Jade Luna, who, yay, he's coming home to be on the show. So I'm very excited.
Huzzah!
Anyway, so I found out recently that we have a pagan pride in South Carolina coming up just before my birthday this year. So I'm very excited about that, and I am hoping to attend it. Lena Fox will be there as well, so I'm really kind of excited.
We have to now, go. There's no excuses. We're going.
I salute you, ma'am. Yes, okay, the older sister has been told. Well, here's the thing, though, about that. I may be out of town on business, which I found out the other day. Apparently, I was supposed to go out of town for a few weeks. Now it looks like it might be several months. We're not sure yet. But either way, I will have time off coming to me, like I do, and I will drive the 6 hours back if necessary to attend said event. So if y'all are anywhere in the area of South Carolina Pagan Pride Day, which is, I believe, October, it's the weekend before October. I don't know the date. It's in October. Look it up. It's on Facebook. I love you. We love you guys. We hope you'll come out, because we're actually going to show ourselves this year. Also going to be, to the best of my knowledge, we're also going to be at the local Pagan Pride this year as well in September. So we are hoping you will show up for that as well. So that's going to be fun. That's on the roster of good things to do. Yeah, shit's just been weird. I don't know. But I'm safely at home this evening, so I'm pretty happy. I'm going to do a lot of sleeping this weekend because it's been such a hellacious work week, and there's just so many things going on. So, yeah, here's the thing. Robin Williams. Okay. So it seems like, so I better just say this up front. I might be funny. I'm not suicidal. I'm not that funny. So I guess I'm not that suicidal. It just seems like a lot of people, huge amounts of pain with comedy, and I think it comes from an inward awkwardness that's beyond belief. And I can't imagine, you know, even the onset of early Parkinson's disease, which is what I heard is now part of what may have motivated this offing of himself. So I, you know, even that wouldn't, I don't think that would take me out and say, you know what, this ride is pretty wild. I want to see how it turns out. You know?
Yeah.
Lauren Bacall was not a surprise. Lauren Bacall was almost 90. I mean, I loved her, but I can't say I was shocked.
Yeah, I think, honestly, she had a really good run. And even as far as Robin Williams, I mean, even as young as he was, you know, because 63 today is still pretty young,
mm-hmm.
you know, to pass away. But, you know, I don't know. I just, oh, God, it's too much. You know, I think we all kind of feel like we lost a friend and we lost an uncle for some of us that, you know, grew up with Mork and Mindy and his, you know, early movies and everything, you know, The World According to Garp. Yes, I did see that as a kid. I probably shouldn't have, but I did enjoy it.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just sad.
It is, but it isn't. I think, here's the thing, if you're that unhappy with life, you should be allowed to have the option. I mean, I know
yeah.
it's sad, and he had, you know, kids and all of that, but, you know, if your life is that miserable and you just, I mean, I like to believe that there's always hope, but maybe for some people there just isn't. I don't know. And
yeah,
I think
and he had been battling it.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I think if you get to that point, you know, if you're in pain, sometimes mental pain is a hell of a lot worse than physical. So I'm trying to be, I mean, of course I feel for the family, but I think you also have to be compassionate towards the person who was in the pain to begin with. So, it's just me. But
yeah.
So today, moving on from that, because I'm sure
yeah.
we will address that with Jade. So I had somebody come into my office today and make a comment about the fact that all of the men in the company look at her tits. And, well, not all the men, no. It was one man in particular that she was complaining about. I'm the one who said, no, you're wrong. Every man is looking at your tits. And she's like, how do you know that? I said, because every man in our company looks at everybody's tits. And then I think I took her by surprise because I said, sweetheart, I'm actually looking at your tits half the time. And she went, you are? I said, yeah, you're looking at mine. You're just not admitting it. She's like, but then she gets this, like, light bulb look on her face, and she says, you know what? I think you're right. I think I have been looking at everybody else's body in the whole place. I said, it's normal. She's
exactly.
Like, you know what? You're right. I said, yeah. And then we got into this huge conversation about tits and how they change. I'm like, wow, solving problems one person at a time, getting people to reality. That's always fun. So, yeah, there's a half-hour discussion about what happens to your tits after you get pregnant, after you nurse, after you stop nursing, age, gravity. It was amazing. What a great conversation. We had a blast. and she was so much happier when she left my room. And I don't think she cares anymore. Yeah, but you know what? A guy walks in the middle of the conversation, and here he walks into these two women talking about tits and looking at each other's tits. Turned beet red, she looked at me and said, I have nothing to contribute to this conversation. I'm just going to leave. I said, well planned. Go ahead. Oh, it was hilarious.
Fine, but you're missing the party.
Well, I mean, it's not like we were showing them. We were just discussing them. But, yeah, I mean, the things that turn people beet red at weird times. Because I've talked to this guy about tits before. It never freaked him out. I guess because somebody else was present, it was like, more than two people can't have this conversation. Well, two women are having this conversation? Amazing. So I know he went into the main room and probably proceeded to announce, those two girls are talking about tits. Maybe we should all
go. Did he go into the bathroom?
No.
Oh, that was wrong.
It wasn't one of those conversations. It was just about tits. I don't know why people freak out when women talk about tits. Men talk about them.
Exactly. They're fun. They are fun. I mean, don't get me wrong. If you've had them long enough, they kind of become a pain in the ass at points. But it's like, I'd be happy if they would have stayed put, but they didn't. Because, you know, I'm over 21. Something like that. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, you're way the fuck over 21.
I'm 21 almost twice as of next week.
Well, then I'm over
That's
21. I'm over 21 twice and a half. Well, more than a half. No, a half. And a half. Yeah. No, and a half. I like it. That's
there
hilarious. Can I now announce my age that way? I am 21 two times and a half. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Double 21. Double down, baby.
Don't say double down in front of my tits. They're down enough. I appreciate you. There's
Do
not
you
a whole lot.
Hang low, can you time in a boat?
No.
I'm sorry, don't smack me.
No,
she just gave me the look.
Alert.
We're not even in the same room. I know she gave me the look. Am I wrong?
Well, you sang it wrong. Do your boobs hang low? Do they wobble to and fro? Can you tie them in a knot? Can you tie them in a bow? Can you throw them over your shoulder like a continental soldier? Do your boobs hang low? That is the song.
All right. I just got schooled.
You did?
Yes, I did.
About the boobs.
Yeah, I can't
well,
quite tie them in a bow just yet, but.
Yeah, you know,
oh.
I have to tell you. Mine are getting there. It's very sad when you're facing straight ahead and your boobs are looking somewhere else. Very sad.
Your boobs are like a potu bird. One's looking this, you know, one boob's looking this way, the other one's looking the other way.
I wish they did not. They're both looking at the floor. I'm like, don't be so depressed. You're ruining my life this way.
Enough,
it's terrible. Cheer up, girl.
Oh,
cheer up. It's sad.
I know. Life is beautiful. People love you. Stop with all this, you know, looking down shit. What the hell? And I have to forewarn people.
Uh-oh.
And I will forewarn you. No, I've got a drink with me.
Uh-oh.
But it's not a strong one. It's just a mild one. So
yeah, sure. I don't believe
a
word
is.
Of it.
Uh-huh. No, I diluted it this time. It's not just straight alcohol. It's got lemonade in it. Homemade lemonade at that.
What are you drinking? I want to know.
Bacardi and lemonade.
Really? How does that taste?
It's pretty good. You can barely taste the Bacardi in it. Yeah, but I do the Bacardi silver. I don't really like dark rum. I like the white rum.
I need a drink. This is so unfair. I need a glass of meat or something, which I happen to have in the house.
Ooh. see it now, I would trade you in a heartbeat because I love me some mean.
I know. Actually, I have some Saint Germain in the room right here. I keep alcohol all around and I never use it. I don't know why.
Yeah,
why
I was gonna
that?
Say. That's funny because you never drink.
And not only that, I have a bottle of Prosecco somewhere in the room.
Of what?
Prosecco.
I don't think I've ever heard of that.
It's Italian. We'll talk later. It's
okay.
Good. Yeah.
Awesome.
But you know what? It's been such a long day. I'm afraid if I do have a sip of alcohol, I'll be asleep on the air. And that wouldn't be good.
Well, see, wait till, like, we're about an hour in.
Get the guest on a roll. Let them start talking.
There you go.
And then grab your glass. Oh, you know what we ought to do? We ought to come up with a Desperate House Witches drinking game.
Oh, my God, that would be so much fun.
How many times? No, it would be fun for the audience. Predict how many times any of the following statements will be made during the show. How many times will Raina say, fuck? That was it.
It would
drink.
Be wasted.
Everybody drink. Oh, seriously, it would be hilarious. So I'm going to ask an audience member to come up with a drinking game. Like, you know how sometimes people do drinking games for, like, presidential debates and shit like that? This would be perfect. We need to have a Showtime. We need to have our own Showtime drinking game. I think that would be hilarious.
I think that would be awesome.
And I'll
you know what?
I'm gonna
put that on the what?
Put it on the page, and I'll send a gift of something of my choosing to the winner. We'll pick the best one. We'll pick a really good one, and we'll send a gift. How do you like that?
That's brilliant.
That's a contest. I used to love contests.
Okay.
I'm trying to open this bottle. I have to tell you, I'm trying to open this bottle of Saint Germain.
Yeah.
And it's not cooperating. This bitch is locked on.
Saint
Germain. Saint, fuck you. You ain't getting drunk. Hello. But oh my goodness.
Nuh-uh, bitch. Not tonight.
All right. You know what? I'm going to hold this up to my statue of Medusa, and I'm going to say, hey, Mom, crack the seal, please. Let me try it now.
Oh, there you go. She probably will, too.
She did. It's open.
Awesome.
Oh, my God.
Yay.
It smells of elderberry.
Was its mother a hamster?
Good. Oh, damn, that's good, and it's very sweet. You need to try some of this Saint Germain. It's very, very nice. It's not, it's warm going down. Oh, did I say that out loud?
Ooh. That's what she said.
That's what she was hoping for. Fuck.
Ba-da-bum.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, yeah. So this week has been really fucked up. In lots of ways, and I want to send a shout out to our brother and his partner, and love and light to his partner, who is unfortunately in the hospital with some illness that we want to go away. Go away,
yes.
Illness. So let's see what else is going on in the world. So apparently, there are more instances of cops killing people. What the fuck is that about? Do you know anything about this? What the hell?
What happened, and this is just the latest in a string, because, you know, as the audience may know, I grew up in Southern California, and I lived through the L.A. riots. So I understand kind of what's going on because – you know, not that anybody else doesn't, but, you know, from my perspective, which is the only one I can give, it's, you know, this poor kid came out of a convenience store. Apparently, from what I've heard, the cops thought he was a suspect in the robbery, which he wasn't, and the boy was unarmed. I believe he was like 15 years old, 16 years old, you know, the same age as my oldest son. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was like, oh, God, which, by the way, shout out to my oldest son, who's going to be 17 tomorrow.
I know, he made it, he lived that long.
I can't believe he lived through it. I'm like, yes.
Shit, I can't believe you lived through it. What are you talking about?
Oh, I know, I know. Touch and go for a while there. But Michael was shot and killed.
Wow.
By the police officers in Ferguson, I believe it was Montana, or no, Missouri. And they wouldn't release the name of the officer for days. Huh. Actually, they just today released the name of the officer. But they were kind of covering up for this guy. And it's like, oh, hell no. See, now the problem with this, because I've seen interviews with, you know, local people that were there that were just trying to protest, and outsiders came in and started with the looting and throwing bombs and or Molotov cocktails, whatever they were throwing at the cops, you know, and the
wow.
cops were retaliating because they showed up full military force when they were peacefully protesting, and that set some people off, which is understandable. You know, you can't do this to an entire group of people for centuries and expect them not to react when you kill one of their babies. You know, I'm pissed. And, I mean, they shut down Times Square, you know, continually shouting out, you know, hands up, don't shoot, hands up, don't shoot. We actually even had a protest here in Charlotte, and I found out about it too late. Otherwise, I would have gone.
Mm-hmm.
But it was over in Freedom Park that they were peacefully protesting in honor of Michael. Because this shit
wow.
has got to stop. We've got to stop killing kids. You know, this whole stand your ground bullshit. You know, this is not 200 years ago. You know, knock your shit off. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to get so pissed about it, but it's just, it's infuriating. You know, these are our kids.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Because you think you got some fucking magic machismo because you got a fucking Glock on your hip? You stupid asshole. You know, and it's not just there. You know, we had one here. There was a guy who got into a car accident. He was an up-and-coming athlete. And he got into an accident, and he went to knock on somebody's door to get help. And he was out
mm-hmm.
of it because he hit his head. And the guy was not armed. And he was like, he had his hands up, and the cop shot him like 12 times. I mean, what
wow.
is the fucking point of that? You know, any other country, you know, and even sometimes here, you know, with reasonable cops, because we know they're not all unreasonable, but, you know, with reasonable cops, you know, shoot for the knee. That will take them down, and whatever weapon they have in their hand is going to go flying. You know, why do you
yeah.
have to murder somebody?
Seriously, and why do you have to discharge so many bullets into one person?
Exactly. It's completely unnecessary. You know, I don't, you know, I've shot guns. I don't, you know, I'm not against guns. I'm against assault rifles and semi-automatics and that, and I don't give a shit what anybody says. Unless you're in the military, you don't need that shit. And you're only fooling yourself or lying to us when you say you do. Because if you're just using it for hunting, it has no other purpose than to tear the flesh apart of another living thing. You know, I don't understand the need for it. I'm sorry you have a tiny penis, but put the metal away. You know, and that doesn't just go for men. I'm not, you know, it's just, it's an ego thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to get off my damn soapbox. I'm sorry, because that's going to really start making me angry.
Okay. You know.
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, you're fine.
So that's what I know of what's going on with that.
Well, that is jacked up beyond belief. Yeah. So it's, yeah. And, oh, by the way, if anybody has a really good cure for severe menstrual cramps, please let me know, because I'm dying over here. I am double
Dami
over
on
in pain.
And strawberry leaf.
Yeah, but I don't have access to that.
Okay. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I think, do you have, like, a health food store close to you?
No.
Okay. Well, crap. Because I'm thinking,
in the fucking country. I have nothing close to me except
Walmart. They might, actually, they might sell it there. They might sell, it's called, like, PMST.
Mm.
But I believe that it contains Damiana and raspberry leaf. Because I know it's strawberry leaf that helps. But I'm not sure about the raspberry.
Not a clue. But, oh, my goodness, I'm cramping. Not fun. Anyway. So is the guest in the queue? Has he arrived?
Let me check. Yes, he is there. Ask and you shall receive. Beetlejuice.
Yeah. Weird.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, darling.
You know, from my understanding, the cheapest way to cure menstrual cramps is crack cocaine.
Okay, no.
Wow. I'm joking, by the way.
I would hope so. But
yeah, you don't feel anything from what I understand.
That makes sense. That does make sense. Yes, if I pound my head with a frying pan, all of my cramps will stop. Or at least I won't care. So, tell us, what is going on that, like, all these people are dying, like, all in a cluster?
Yeah, you know, it's, and if you can imagine, energetically, next week is supposed to be worse.
No, thanks.
Yeah, there's a Saturn-Mars conjunction going on the planet right now, and it's pretty fierce. Yeah, the whole, you know, I heard most of what you guys were saying earlier before. The street I live on, which I can't unfortunately get too much into it, is, you know, mourning big time right now.
Yeah,
Robin Williams,
yeah,
you know.
Imagine.
And in proper astrology, one big problem, again, with Western astrology is it does not have any clue on how to use the North and the South Node. They seem, the North Node is your past life and all these, you know, we call the North Node the head of Medusa. And Robin Williams was born with his moon in direct conjunction to the North Node, which means he would have a life of depression.
Wow.
Completely exempt from any knowledge in the Western system at all, because Medusa's head, the North Node, is severe. Now, so that whole thing was pretty crazy. There are people that live in my neighborhood that were incredibly impacted that knew him personally, one of them on a day-to-day basis. And there's just been a lot of intensity out there. But this alignment we're going through universally right now is pretty, pretty intense. Everyone's feeling it. Everyone is feeling it. What have you guys been going through?
And extend our sympathies to your friends.
Yeah, quite personal. Not to me, but to people I know really well. That, as a matter of fact, you know, my next door neighbor is heavily impacted by this, and was just with him a month ago, shooting his documentary, and Robin Williams is in it from beginning to end. And so I knew there was some things coming with him before. I didn't know it was going to result in suicide. You know, it's one of those things that there are certain alignments in astrology that do promote a suicidal tendency, as you would call it.
Mm-hmm.
And, he has them. He had them, you know. And life, it's, you know, this thing is a lot of people are really discussing right now how intense this planet is and all the sorrows of the world right now. And when you come from what I call Hecate consciousness, which is, you know, the supreme consciousness of the Divine Mother, the world is in perfect harmony all the time. There is nothing bad ever going on anywhere. Karma is just dished out. It's brought back. It's just this accumulation of shit. And when you expect the world to be this place of great education and learning, and that's really what it's for. It's not. We're not here for peace. There has never been a time in history where there's been peace. You study Indian philosophy, you have the Ramayana War 5,000 years ago, then you have the Mahabharata War, then it goes on and on. This planet is, that's what it is. We are here to learn, grow, and India is very specific about the reasons why the world has to be this way, you know, because it's not our home. It's where we come to learn. We eventually evolve from this plane of consciousness, and the goal is the realm that's after here. And if you have an incredibly perfect life and harmony, when you pass on, the first thing you do is go, you know what, I want another one of those. And you come right back down and you get another one. But because of its intensity level, most people, when they're done here, tend to check out for a while, and that's what the afterlife is meant to be. But if it was always perfect down here and there wasn't all this chaos going on this planet, all we would do is just reincarnate. Utopia. We would just, oh, when I'm done, I want more of that. I want more of that. But, you know, in my guru in India would always say the most uncomfortable things about creation. He said, listen, you know, it is a dream down here, but it's an educational dream. It's one that you learn. And he would say, unfortunately, more people wake up from nightmares than they do good dreams. And then he would say, when was your last good dream? I'm like, oh, my God, it was the other night. I remember I had this dream. I had, like, won the lottery, and I remember waking up going, damn, God, I just woke up from a dream. I won the lottery. I was going to collect $1 million. You know, we don't like to wake up from good dreams. We like to stay in that dream. Where that dream you have, the nightmare, you wake up and go, oh, my God, thank God that's over. I don't want that dream again. Oddly enough, there's more option for realization through the hard stuff. And that's what I say is the Dark Mother consciousness. She has to keep this world in turmoil and situations in turmoil because we would never desire to go home. We would just keep reincarnating right here. And so I've accepted Earth as just, you know, a place of turmoil. And so I encourage other people to do that. It doesn't mean you become some negative functioning human being. I think it allows you the opportunity to release it and still enjoy while it's a mess. You know, because I expect it to be like this. And in astrology, which kind of nails it all down in the midst of universal transitions, the planets that wreak the most havoc, like Saturn, the North Node, Pluto, are very slow-moving planets, which means they're on Earth. It's already slated through the world of astrology. You're meant to have much more difficult times on this planet than good times. The planet Venus brings joy and happiness, but it only conjuncts an area of your chart for a few days, where Saturn will come in and conjunct an area of your chart for 3 years, where Saturn kind of sets the tone of what life really is all about down here, and that's why in India they call him the king of the planet, because we have to deal with him, the challenges, the suffering, more than we get this fleeting Venus that just passes by, throws some magic around, and then, you know, returns to her abode. Well, we have to deal with Saturn consistently. And so it's really, spirituality comes down to one thing. How can you handle the shit when it's there? It's not about manifesting a perfect life. It's not about getting out of the shit. It's not about getting, it's like, how can you function when it sucks? That's really what spirituality is about. It's about being unaffected by the shit of the universe. It's a very hard state to get into, but there is a place you can get to where there's so much energy and love and light going through your body, you're just not impacted by these things as much. That's somewhat of the goal.
Yeah.
So suffering, you know, get comfortable with it. You know, I am. You know, that's why I embrace the most ferocious forms of the Dark Mother. I invoke these forms that are the most uncomfortable to work with because it gives you more leverage to deal with life as it happens. If you just keep running towards these light deities, the ones that bring all the peace and happiness, you're never going to be able to endure the shit when it happens. That's what Dark Mother's for. You know, she takes this suffering on every day and she lives in it and she has for eternity and always will. She handles this stuff as it's nothing, where we, on the other hand, can only handle it in small doses. We have to learn to be able to handle the suffering because, you know, it's about being unaffected. That's really what it's about. It's about being comfortable with what makes you uncomfortable. This is what the spiritual path is like. It's not about manifesting. It's not about white light, healing this. It's about how can you handle the shit when it happens. And the Dark Mother is supposed to breed strength, where strength and endurance is absolutely essential for the spiritual path. And I had my client right before here, why is everything so fucking hard all the time? Because you need to advance. And I'll explain it like this. You know, and my teacher in India explained it the best. He said, eventually we get realized. And it what is determined in your state of realization is what is your experience going to be like? If you have an easy lot, it's like blowing glass, you know, and if you blow a glass and you're making a cup as an example or a glass cup and you blow it really fast, it's going to break really easy. So when consciousness or enlightenment descends on that person, their cup, which is their body, snaps, and then they get realization after they die. So people that have the easier lot in life or in incarnations, they're not able to handle consciousness when it settles in, so it happens after they die, so they get what we call mukti. But if you're meant to experience consciousness while you are in your body, while you stay in it, then your body and your consciousness has to be blown like a glass blower very slowly over time, where you have to handle the heat. So when God realization sets in, your glass doesn't snap. It handles the whole thing. And that's what a saint or a realized master is they died while they stayed in their body. So they're in the afterlife, but they are completely functioning on this earth plane. And that is what the slow burning glass method is all about. And if you're connected to Hecate, you have to be prepared for that path, which means she wants you to retain your consciousness after you're done. So you get to sustain your body, and then she works through you. And what a saint really is the deity that they become. You just get to watch and observe that deity work through you. You don't even really get to participate very much. You observe its work. Like when Moses was splitting the Red Seas and doing all these various things, he was completely consumed with the god that he worshipped, by the way, which was Hermes. So that god went right into his body, and he invoked that force and watched Hermes work through him. He just got to watch. You become a witness to a higher force working through you. That's what the goal is. And you only get that experience if you've been blown, no pun intended, slowly over time. I didn't want to pull this back into the strange unicorn stories of last time.
Why not?
Well, we can. If people are kind of down and out, hey, let's throw in the crazy beast unicorns. But, so we have to be, no pun intended again, blown slowly over time. You have to handle the suffering, really what it comes down to, and that's what a master's about. So you don't want to snap. Otherwise, then you get mukti, infinite bliss. You get the experience of eternity. But if you have been slowly blown over time, your glass is strong. And so when that time of realization comes, you sustain your body, and then that force works through you, and you get to watch it. And that is a greater goal. And it's called a Satguru in India. That's their name, their term for it. And it's someone that gets to witness God entirely working through their body.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a deity of choice. You don't actually, believe it or not, ever choose these deities. That's the hysterical part. You don't get to choose the goddess you want to worship. You don't get to choose the god you think that you do. But when you make those choices, they're being made from the divine. And if you make a decision that is not right for you, you will stop and you will remove it and another one will come in. Because we don't get to choose that. We already are something. It's about unfolding what you already are. It's not about choosing it. So as much as we feel we have those choices of what deity we eventually perfect, it's already been chosen at the beginning of creation.
You know, if I can interject for just a second, I actually just, within the past couple weeks, had a switchover. Because, as you know, I've been a devotee of Hecate as well. You know, and she's kind of like, okay, you know what? I need a break from you. Yeah, at least that's the way I've felt. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm not going to push it. You know, but Athena has presented herself to me because, you know, I had an issue going on, and I talked to her, and the very next day I went into the little one's room because I have to pull the shades up because he has a window that goes all the way almost to the floor. So I have to pull the shades up so the cats don't break the blinds because they like looking in the backyard. And sure enough, I had asked her that night, and the next morning when I did that, there, sitting right there, was an owl feather. And I
was
like,
what?
An owl feather. One of our barred owls left a feather. And it, every time I've kind of, you know, really focused on it and had an issue, because this was a couple years back, there was actually an owl pellet left on my back porch. I have a railing, you know, a little fenced-in part, you know, and there was an owl pellet right there. I was like, oh, my God, okay. I will sit back and I will let you do your thing then.
And what did it mean? What did the feather mean to you?
To me, it was, I heard you. I got this shit. Just sit back and stop.
Well, in India, you learn something that I do want people to definitely hear. And this is, you sparked a thought in mind. I'm not technically responding to what you said, but when it comes to transitions, is when you're supposed to refrain from making them. When the universe puts you through a change, which happens a lot, in India you're taught very early that is when you do not make changes. Because then you get comfortable with instability. And, you know, as a matter of fact, you're supposed to make them when things are like you've, when you've completed something, there's a smoothness when you're finished. Or when it's finished with you, either way. However you want to see it. But under difficult times, when things are really intense, often changes we make in those moments are mistakes because they come without clarity. And difficult times, we don't have a lot of clarity. I see a lot of people shifting around from God to goddess and this and that and all that stuff, and my teacher in India was completely against it. As a matter of fact, the only – I've sustained a major injury in my life when I was making a change, and – this sounds kind of petty, but I'm not only am I a worshiper of Hecate, as we all know, I'm very animated about choosing a particular form of even her herself. And basically the goal of Tantra is personalizing God in the most finite way. And the more personal you can create a relationship with that form, the more advanced you actually become, or more direct experiences you actually have. I was very specific to worshiping a form of Hecate, and I'm the type where I make statues. I will spend, you know, 5 days making a statue of the goddess Hecate that I worship in that particular form, and I had gone very deep with this very specific form of Hecate, and I had a very challenging experience take place internally where I figured I wanted a tad bit of a lighter form of Hecate, because I was going through an intense transition. I just needed a little bit of a lighter energy, because Hecate likes to, she throws her darkest forms at me. She wants me, this whole slow burning glass method is very clear with me what she's doing with me. But at that time, I took the statue I had, submerged it in a river, and started making another one. And in the process of making another one, I put a knife through my hand. Meaning I was actually carving it with a knife, because I had this little intricate detail I had to carve out around the nose and around the eyes. So I had a knife, and I was carving it, and I put the knife all the way through my hand. And blood just splattered all over the statue I was working on. It was one of those very intense moments. And I was living in the mountains in the middle of nowhere. There was nowhere to go for me. I could only wrap this thing up and deal with whatever was going on. I had to cut off the circulation to the bottom of my hand. I wrapped it up. I was on my way somewhere, but it was going to take a good several hours. So I had to sit back for a moment and just kind of calculate what was going on. And I felt the seriousness of me making a wrong decision. It was serious, and it was, and Hecate was very clear that she was not done under that form with me at all. And when I was laying back and, you know, pouring blood out, and I'm looking at a statue I was creating, it was just, I mean, when I pulled the knife out of my hand, blood dropped like opening an egg. It was like all over the statue. It was one of the weirdest experiences I had with her. But I had to sit back and go, okay, there's a lot of ways to look at this, and I really don't want to find out. I don't want to come to an opinion. I would like you to kind of guide the way. And there was a fierceness around Hecate, and we were just absolutely not finished. And then right at that time, I remembered what my guru had said. He said, don't. And he was very clear that don't make changes during challenging times. You're not supposed to, because you could miss a major working that's going on in that moment. I'm not a firm believer that our minds always know what we should be doing. I'm a firm believer our hearts do. And it takes a long, long time to live from the heart. And it was on that day and at that moment when that all happened with me. Eventually, I put myself together and went to the hospital. It took me a few hours to get down there. It was a big mess. It was snowing outside. It was in the mountains of California. It was a crazy experience. Now, if I'm going to make a change that's significant, which, by the way, I recently have, not out of Hecate, but out of the forms of Hecate that I worship, there, I got a clarity recently about the statue I worship and its form out of the blue, but I have to really be certain that she is guiding that way. Otherwise, it's a disruption, and it creates an incompletion that the other deity then officially has to finish out. So when times are tough, is what I'm saying, is when we're not supposed to make those changes. It's when we're clear and we're in a phase where we emotionally can really have a sense of deep clarity, then we make that change. But as you, I don't know if you ever read Hecate 1, my first book, I don't like people making changes at all. And when people come in and they pick a form, I see it as a marriage. I see it as a marriage, and you are learning to unify with that force. And it is a marriage, and just when things get hard doesn't mean you leave a marriage. You work things out, and that's the way that it works. Hecate, on the other hand, poses a lot of internal transition, and I see her as being too complicated for most because of the level of transition she brings people. That slow burning method, man, that is her. And that's why in India, and I've said on the show before, it is known that Kali is the only goddess that creates satgurus, the people that sustain their body. She's the only force. All the other goddesses allow you to have the realization after you drop your body because it's easier. Like Lakshmi in India is a good example. She has more worshippers than Kali, and so does Saraswati, because you get mukti, infinite bliss, after you die by worshipping them. But if you worship Kali, you have to be prepared to become a saint while you're in your body. It's a different energy. And she, you know, Kali in India, which I equate to Hecate, her only job is creating masters, people that can endure her creation, not just the simple parts that are easy, but to endure the whole damn thing. And that's when we're worshiping Hecate, you have to be able to embrace the whole spectrum of creation, not just the simple, easy parts that we like. Or like a man looking at a beautiful woman and going, oh, she's so beautiful, I'm in love. It's easy to love things that are easy to love. Hecate stretches you to make you love the old crone. She stretches you to love the things that make you uncomfortable. She creates masters. That's all there is to it.
Huh.
Mastery comes through this goddess, and she's not for everybody. But she's for masters. That's what she is. And here's the thing is, if at the end of your evolution and creation, your job is to obtain God realization while you're in your body, she's involved. That's it. It's her shit down here. It's her creation. She's the infinite dark mother, and this is the thing about India and Kali. Kali is not just a goddess that rules over magic and witchcraft and all these simple things. This is a force that is inside of every human being. Those childbirthing goddesses, the ones that are there when you take a birth and they're involved in that, are stamping you with your purpose, your destiny. They don't just rule over whatever little actions we give them. They rule over creation. And they rule over the whole scope. So Hecate, being a childbirthing goddess, means she's there to stamp you with your karma the second you're born. She handles the whole damn thing. So she's not, she is witchcraft, and she is all these other various things that we give her, but she is more specifically the goddess, the dark mother that deals with the shit in creation that we don't really want to deal with. And the only way you can become a master is to be able to endure all aspects of creation, not just the parts that make us comfortable.
Yeah.
So if you belong to Hecate, there's nothing you can do about it. You can't throw her out. You can't go. There's nothing that can be done. If your lot, which has been set at the second your spirit descended from the ocean of light into consciousness, whatever that is, just is, cannot be changed. It's locked. And you have to go through things to find it.
Yeah, and I think that's part of my problem right now, because, I mean, it's just been a year of just crud upon crud upon crud upon crud upon crud upon crud. Oh, look, you can take a break. Here's some more crud, you know. But I was actually kind of hurt because I felt her like, okay, you know what, you need to take a step back. You know, and I kind of, I'm getting to the point where I'm understanding why she had me step back, because I can get manic when I'm in the state. You can ask my sister. You know, it's like, I am very determined, you know, if, and especially if I think the situation is not fair, I go balls to the walls, like, okay, but I'm going to make this fair. You know, and I think that's the lesson I'm learning, is that, you know what, sometimes you can't. And let me handle it, relax, take a breath. You know, Athena, deal with her for a minute, you know, because I'm not in the mood for her, because I'm going to snap her neck. You know, that's what I've been feeling from her for the past, like, month or so. Which is fine, I understand. I get on my own nerves at points when I get to that manic state. You know,
well,
but,
you know, and so before, you know, definitely the thing is, we can't become something we're not. So when transitions like this happen and changes are being made, there is a great possibility you're being led towards what is closer to you to begin with. And so we have to be open to that possibility. There is a firmness in connection that takes place when you're in it. You can't explain it. I couldn't even on this show, which is my favorite show to go on, could not tell you guys experiences that I've had with Hecate and the moments in my 20 years with her now where I've had moments where I've wanted out of this relationship. I've had severe things in relationship to her and things that are part of her world that were so intense for me to deal with. I had tried, okay, you know what, I'm going to lay it on this show then. I'm going to talk about one. I'm not going to use names or experiences. Someone I knew loosely, you know, I'm debating on what I'm talking about, but I had been around someone that went through something horrific and ended up in the loss of their life. And I felt Hecate in the whole thing from beginning to end. I went home and I sat in front of Hecate after the transition had actually happened, and I said, you know what, I don't know if I want any more of this. I saw what happened to that person, and they were completely victimized by a random situation. I felt Hecate inside of it, inside and out, and I'm like, I'm done. That's a little bit too much. This was personal. This hit me right core in the center. And I felt Hecate involved in every single stage of it, almost as if whatever just happened, she wanted it to happen. And it was something very personal to me that was core. And I went home after everything happened. At this time, I had a 4.5-foot statue of Hecate, life-size, magnificent, went in there and said, I'm taking you down. I'm done. I'm moving on. I'm finding some other goddess to worship. I'm moving on. Now, that night when it happened, as I was sitting in front of my Hecate announcing my transition of letting go of her and possibly worshiping a much simpler form of the goddess, I got tired and went to bed. And that night when I was sleeping in my deep sadness and mourning of what had just happened to someone I know very personally, she gave me a dream of what this person had just done in their life prior. Changed everything. She knows. I didn't. What she showed me that this person, it means it was, she was there to balance a lot that this person had created. And basically saying, listen, that person's fine. They're with me. Everything is okay. But she was kind enough to show me the situations that this person had done in their most previous incarnation to make that whole thing happen. And the reason why she was so involved in what had happened changed everything. Now, the details of this were pretty graphic. I mean, it was a very extremely challenging situation. But I woke up the next morning and just wailed in front of my statue. I'm like, I can't believe the wisdom that comes from this goddess. She's just a balancer. That's all she does is balance things out in creation. She's not malefic. She's not mean. She's not cruel. She's pure justice. That's all she is. And the Greek magical papyri and translations, you go look at the back and she is associated with justice. Means everything she does, whether she likes it or not, is just balancing it out. It has to happen. In one life, you're in Thailand and you're some crazy lunatic guy and you kill a couple Asian women, your next life, you're going to be killed by those same people.
Yeah.
It is just balancing itself out, and it's so intense because the law of Kali in India is nothing bad is ever happening in creation. Just karma is being spent and dealt, and that's it. That's it. Nothing's going on other than karma. You know, if you are a nice human being and you didn't do harm to other people and there's a serial killer on your street, he can't even, you've been forgotten about. You're not even on his radar. You only end up on his radar is if you have karma to end up on his radar. That's it. And it's just balancing itself out. I mean, I have heard these stories over and over again. Being in India, you just hear things differently. I had to do a radio show on Jeffrey Dahmer in New York once, and I brought it up to a teacher of mine in India who had never even heard of the word Jeffrey Dahmer or who this person was, and out of the blue just spouts, oh, he was in Haiti his life before and was cannibalized and eaten by 18 people.
Wow.
Oh, so he was put in a city in a state where, guess what? He's going to eat the people who ate him. You're not going to get the urge to eat someone if it didn't just happen to you. You're not. It's not in your consciousness. I don't have any desire to eat a person. I have no interest in it. I find it humorous in the movie sense of the word. I the story or the book Cannibal about the German who went online saying, I want to eat someone, and I read it inside out, and I was in awe of the whole damn thing. I find certain things to be fascinating, but I myself don't want to eat a person. You know, that's just, it's not in my consciousness. Why was it in his consciousness? Because it happened to him. And the just, you know, we're going to go off to some heavy Hecate stuff here, but when a person murders another person, it automatically sets them up to repeat the opposite experience in that relationship. Like, let's just say, like, a man is killing a woman, he's a serial killer, and he kills that woman. Well, she feels so defenseless in that moment of being harmed, then her next life she will take a form of pure, undiluted power and want to experience the opposite of being in that victimized form. The killer, on the other hand, feels so horrific after he dies about the things that he has done, he immediately withdraws into powerlessness and puts himself into victim role. They will meet again, and she'll kill him. That's all there is to it. These are the plays of creation. And my guru in India once said, he said, the play between murderer and victim is so deep, sometimes a master has to intervene and stop it because it will keep happening repeatedly.
Wow.
And so, you know, we're just dealing with the balance of things. And Hecate is the equalizer. She is the balancer. And that is her. She's not just a god of magic, goddess of magic. She is the goddess of balancing out impressions. When they say she was a goddess of justice, and even the goddess of revenge, which was attributed to her in the Greek magical papyri and translation, she's just pure, undiluted justice. What we do comes back to us. That's it. There's no evil in the world going on right now. There's nothing happening on this planet that is bad, wrong, good, or evil. It is just pure justice. That is a belief that is so hard for people to obtain. That is why Hecate, I believe, is called the mystery goddess. Her mysteries are so advanced, the normal mind can't comprehend her. It can't.
Hmm.
It wants to create victims. It wants to create this, and there is no victim. There is no predator. There's just karma. That's it. And when you learn that and you really realize that there's only thing that is going on is karma, you learn to be a nice human being and to love everyone. Because whatever shit you put out there, she has to bring it back. And I've said before, you don't ever want the goddess you worship, you don't ever want her evil eye looking at you. Because if you fuck up, you're going to get it. And that's not the relationship. You know, you when you're a mom, as you guys know, you know, when your kids mess up, you have a responsibility to kind of change their behavior. Same with Hecate.
Yes.
When we fuck up, she has a responsibility to change her behavior. So you have to, in the midst of worshiping, in my opinion, one of the darkest forms of the goddess in creation, which is Hecate, you don't want her evil eye on you. You want her love, which means worship her and be a good human being. That's it. That's the goal. But, yeah, karma is a mess, and it's being dealt out in large masses right now, but it's just the play of creation that has to happen, and it's going to get worse. And we as human beings have a responsibility. You can go out there and try to change it if you want. It's not going to work because it has to happen this way. Your job is being strong enough to endure it when it happens, not trying to make sure it doesn't happen, because it's going to happen. Shit's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's about being strong enough to endure it when it does. That's a hard thing, and especially when we're all right now, we're all kind of going through shit, you know. It's like we're all going through turmoil, we're all going through this, but there is a point you get to when you can spiritually understand it to such an extent, you're not really affected by it. And the goal of spirituality is to be able to endure whatever happens. So I can't stand this white light crap that goes on out there. I mean, I cannot stand it. It breeds weak people that can't endure the shit when it happens. That's all it does. Hecate is about being able to endure it when it does. She makes unaffected people, people that can handle this stuff. People who can't, go worship something else, man. Because and get mukti, get infinite bliss, get the hell out of here. If you're meant to experience the full totality of creation, you have to endure the shit. You can't just love this.
Yeah.
You can't just love the beautiful girl. You have to love the old lady, too. You have to love all of it, not just the parts that are comfortable to love. I think it's shitty when someone just embraces white light spirituality. Oh, it's like a man saying, oh, let's love the pretty girl. Easy. Easy to fucking do. Let's embrace the things that aren't that that are not that comfortable. That is the path of liberation. That's the path I'm on. I love sitting in the things that make me uncomfortable.
I have to be honest. I think because I started out that way, you know, I've always been a witch, you know, because from the time I was a child, I have always been drawn to the supernatural and the darker side of life and everything. When I first got into, you know, because I was Wiccan when I first got into it, and it was, okay, well, you can't do this, and you can't do that, and you can't do that. And I found it actually very frustrating. And because I was trying to live in such a manner as, you know, okay, well, I can't think bad thoughts, I can't do this, I can't do that, it actually drove me to the point where, you know, because most of us, at some point along the path, we go off it. Like, you know what, fuck this shit, this is not working, this is not for me, maybe I'm doing it wrong, and you have to step back and assess. And I did that, oh gosh, I had split from my first husband, I had moved in with my parents, with my son, and I got to a point, I'm like, you know what, this is bullshit, this is all bullshit. And I stepped away from witchcraft for a good year, maybe two. And then I was like, okay, you know what? I can't live without it. This is part of who I am, but I have to get back into it and reassess and read more and expand myself and, you know, try to figure out what my part in this is. You know, and I'm still figuring it out every single day. It's like, you know, I throw a little bit of hoodoo in there. I throw a little bit of, not Santeria, because I'm actually scared of that. But, you know, Italian witchcraft, Scottish witchcraft, you name it. You know, if it calls to me, I will delve into it. you know, and I think that's another part that, I don't know, these people are so scared, like, okay, if I do this, I'm going to receive bad karma, and then my life is going to be shit. No, it's the karma is already there. You know, I don't know. Am I making sense?
Yeah, I'm following you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Raina, are you following her?
Yeah, I don't need any breadcrumbs. I'm here. I follow.
But I digress. I mean, it's just, yeah, you got to.
You got what?
You
what
gotta,
did you say?
I said I digress.
I got it. It's
yeah.
This whole Leela of creation now. Not to shift gears here, but, you know, how about this group ISIS exterminating the Yazidis tribes? Now, do you guys know the Yazidis tribes? This is pagan Islam here. I mean, a really big deal spiritually that the only group of pagans in Arabia are being exterminated. I mean, that's a big deal. The Yazidis worship gods. They are the only group in all of Arabia that worships gods. And matter of fact, I have talked about them on other radio shows before in the past, saying, listen, I believe Baphomet came from them wholeheartedly. I don't think Baphomet came from the Knights of Templar. I think the Knights of Templar took it from them. They were the first to worship those goat forms and all that stuff. It's actually hideous what's going on. So my job is going, okay, what does this all mean? What does this all mean that this group is being exterminated as we're speaking? It's quite sensitive to me personally because they are pagans. That's what they are. That's what they do. They worship gods. That's why they're being selected as devil worshippers and being exterminated. Big transitions going on this planet. You know, as a matter of fact, I believe the only thing I can take from it is that Islam in its modern state is trying to take on its energy, because you take on the energy of what you exterminate. Like, if you're a Christian in one life and you kill witches, you will end up a witch. It's just the way that it's, like, if you're a witch and you kill a Christian, you're going to end up in that role. You experience the opposite. So I believe on some level their energy is meant to be distributed through Islam for the next age. This age we're going into, the diversity of God will be recognized and appreciated as it's not now. It's the only way I can rationalize the thing with them as being exterminated, because we're not really going to help them enough to stop the problem, is the fact that whatever they represent needs to become universal and enter other people's genes and makeup, and that's, you know, part of the age. But, that to me was so, when I saw their name flip up, the Yazidis tribes I've been talking about for a very long time, because I even believe Hecate might have had a role in them at one point or the other, you know, being a goddess from Troy and all that, and there were tribes that were not that far away from that location. And, you know, if Hecate was a goddess that could have been at one point Middle Eastern, then she might have been very much involved in the Yazidi tribes. But, that was really tough to swallow, watching and hearing that this was going on, because I've had written essays about how Baphomet, very well, in my opinion, comes from them. Even the form that we see with the goat, because the goat is such a symbolic statement in the Middle East. So he has intense time going on. I mean, a lot of energy is being thrown around, and it's also an energy that a lot of people are very uncomfortable with. And watch next week when this gets worse.
Wow.
Please elaborate.
Saturn and Mars are just now conjuncting in the universe. In Libra, by the way, not Scorpio.
Uh-huh.
So when you go online, you see that Saturn and Mars are conjunct in Scorpio. Wrong. You can see it visually with your own eyes. It's being conjunct inside of Libra, which means partnerships are going to fall apart, relationships. There's going to be a lot of arguing with people. There's going to be a lot of fighting with people that we love. It's that kind of turmoil over the next week.
Great! Oh, lovely!
I think the gloominess, though, is what I talked about in our last show, the Medusa's head going into Virgo, exalting it. That's a gloomy energy, and that's the energy I think people are even feeling more than the other one.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a sense of foreboding. I mean, Raina was just talking about that earlier. It's like, what the fuck is going on?
Now, Raina, what were you referring to when you said that?
I don't know.
for that foreboding energy, what does that feel like to you?
I don't fucking remember. I don't know. I'm lucky I know my name at this point. No, seriously, I honestly, it's been a lot. There have been a lot of changes going on with certain stuff that you and I have talked about.
Yeah.
None of it is related to what you just said a moment ago, but it's a lot of, you know, here, like, for example, so there was a discussion about a situation at work, and then it's done a total 180, and the things that I thought weren't happening are happening, and the things I thought I had escaped, oh, I guess I didn't. But I'm kind of looking forward to the things I can't escape now. It's probably because of you. Now I'm seeing, well, here's the thing. Like, I'm a creature of habit to a large extent. And I like things to be a certain way for an extensive amount of time because this is what I'm used to. And again, creature of habit, a whole nine yards. But now I'm like, oh, wait a minute. There's an upside to everything. And I've managed to find it. So you and I will talk about that more offline, I'm sure. But, yeah, there's just a lot of, well, is it going to be a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. Well, why don't we try to see the good parts of it, and we'll deal with whatever's bad about it. Okay. Because the gods want you to go where they want you to go, and that's it. I learned that a long time ago.
Location is a very big deal where you are stationed. And spiritually, like I would love at this moment in creation to hop out of L.A. I would love that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that there is something kind of wrapping up here, which will allow me to make the transition to move to the East Coast. The goal in time is to be bi-coastal, is to come back and forth, and that goal I think will be achieved yet. There is work done. I'll never forget when my teacher, Bao, when I lived here in L.A. before and he was alive, he said, I want you staying in Los Angeles County.
Mm-hmm.
And I, on the other hand, bought my first home in a place called Wrightwood, which is on the coast between
Wrightwood.
Riverside. Yes, I live. That's where big openings happened for me with Hecate. That's when a lot of stuff happened. I bought a house. It was on the San Bernardino side of the city. And right after I bought it, they moved the line, and it was back in Los Angeles County again. And I went, oh, my God, that was something. They literally moved the line by 20 feet because of a water reservoir that was there. And nevertheless, Wrightwood's been there since the 1800s. They just happened to move it right the week I bought a house. And, oh, yeah, you're now in Los Angeles County, not Riverside. I'm like, are you serious? I can't get out of this frickin' county. But there is shit, so to speak, or energetic muck that is inside of each location on this planet, and some people are stationed in a very specific area to help the mother clean it out. And what they go through internally and spiritually is a part of that.
Go ahead.
No, you finish your thought. You're already halfway in.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to keep stepping over you, but no, that's actually how Raina and I met. We had to clean up some muck from where we met, because our other sister joined us in that apartment complex. So, yeah, there is some shit going down there.
Yeah, there is. You know, but some of the most intense I've ever felt is in the city I'm in right now. And I mean, I've been in Bombay, India, Mumbai, and, you know, there were forces. You know, I'm the type of person, I like to walk through a large city at like 3 a.m. and just witness the muck that's existing there. And I, in Bombay, one time went out, and several nights I went out, and just kind of walking through the city just to feel energetically the intensity. The only place I've ever felt it was just a tad bit darker than Bombay was right here in Los Angeles. There are moments where you're walking and so much intense energy will go through you. And I don't like to use the word positive and negative because I just think it sets the wrong tone, but heavy, heavy, heavy energies will just flow through you. And now being what I call an agora, which means my job is trying to embrace uncomfort to find comfort in it, this trash will move through me that is dark and malefic challenging, and then my goal is to sit there and unravel the knots energetically that it's creating in my system. Not to get rid of it, not to move it out, but to understand it and to be able to consciously recognize where it is and where it comes from. Especially like in L.A., what you say someone was murdered in an apartment complex. That stains the energy around that location. And if you add a couple more through time, that location is officially what you would use the word damned. Means it is a portal now for very dark energies. L.A. has some of those that are so... there's one apartment complex, every time I walk by it, just the amount of shit that moves through my system is so deep, I have to sit right there, sit down, and work it out. And through it, you gain what we call a spiritual muscle. A spiritual muscle is necessary if you're going to endure life. And the stronger your spiritual muscle is, the more you can endure the shit when it happens. So the point of this practice is to sit there and endure. It's the one of the reasons why, you know, the city, I do, as much as it's not my favorite place on earth, I have to admire it because of it is educating me on how to deal with darkness and the challenges of life and the really atrocious energies that exist in the universe right here in this city. And I can walk right through them and go, okay, it's time for Agora. Let's work out the shit. Let's work out the heavy, tough stuff. So what happens when life comes in and just throws you some challenging energy, it's nothing compared to what you've dealt with before. And this is why children, and I don't want to be an advocate for children having hard lives because I want children to have good lives. But that child that's had a hard life and didn't get an easy slot or easy lot at the beginning has more option for spiritualization than one that had a really good upbringing. Because you learn to endure things when you're growing up. If you learn to endure really intense, hard things, then the other things that life has to throw at you are just really not that big of a deal. You know, it's like you've seen, we have all seen people when just the slightest things happen, they crumble, and you're like, God, what's wrong with you? You know, like I've been the amount of shit I had been through by the time I was 18, I mean, I was prepared for this next level of this journey. And it's the only way that I could actually perceive it. Because now, where other people are crumbling, I'm not. I've been through shit like that. I've been through that when I was a kid. I've been through other things like that. So most of the time when someone is divinely connected to a spiritual path, their upbringing is going to be tough. It's going to be hard. It's going to be. Because you learn how to endure things at a level other people can't. People have the easy lives growing up. Man, it's like... I mean, you talk about crying at the drop of a hat. You see this happen, especially in this city. You got Beverly Hills on one side, then you have Hollywood and the slums right on the other, and you see the difference in personalities that it brings up. Now, meanwhile, if you're not a spiritually conscious person, it's really better to be on the lighter side. It really is, because when you're in the dark without consciousness, it's really bad. So I'm not an advocate for like, you know, hey, let's, you know, make our kids suffer to make them stronger. It's not like that. Because, you know, like I said, if you don't have consciousness and you're brought up on the wrong side of the block, you're going to be a mess more than the person's had a good upbringing. But when you're spiritually ready, you have to trade in your mother and father for the real mother and father. You just have to. And they want it that way. And they will set it up that way. That's the way it works. And so, nevertheless, endurance. That's what we're talking about today. It seems the whole time I've been on is about being able to endure things. I don't like people posting, oh my God, the world's falling apart, I want to hide in a shell. Well then go fucking hide in your shell. Because you can't handle anything. It's going to be tough. Can you imagine, you know, in the 40s there was a World War II and there was a Hitler on this planet. Can you imagine that was happening now? It's actually not worse now than it was then. It's not.
Yeah.
It appears that way. Because we weren't alive then. But if we were alive and World War II was happening and Hitler was exterminating Jews and a number of this is nothing compared to that. It's nothing. So, you know, we have to stop crying. We have to stop getting upset about these things. Life is going to throw some blows and it's doing it for you, not against you. It's trying to make you a master in your own right. That's what darkness is meant to do. It's meant to create strength in you. It's meant to test you. Where are you at in life? God is the light, or whatever you want to call it, Brahma. It's the light, but it's that darkness that keeps throwing those jabs at you and says, where are you at? Where are you at? Can you box back, or are you going to crumble the next time I throw a blow at you? It's teaching you to box. It's teaching you. It's teaching you to handle the bigger picture and to become warriors. That's why in India, the Kshatriya class, the warrior class, was the spiritual class. It's higher than the Brahmin in spiritual respects because they were taught how to endure, defend, and win. You know, I hate the term winner and loser, and when someone uses the word loser, I can't stand it. I think it's one of the most pitiful words to call another human being is a loser. Now, in the India standpoint, I agree with their version of a winner and a loser. A winner has nothing to do with monetary gain and their material luxury in life. A winner was someone who could endure the shit. So they became a warrior, and they won. And winning meant being unaffected. Means that you got to a point where you were able to battle to a place where you were unaffected by the things that happened in life, where a loser was someone that crumbled when things got hard. That was what a loser was. Now, that term, I like them. If you're going to actually buckle because the world's hard, loser. If you're able to box and handle this shit, you're a winner. And I don't care about money, and I don't care if people have money or not. It doesn't mean anything to me. And I don't think we should use terms like winner and loser to define people that way. But if you're referring to the ability to handle life and its circumstances, I love the term winner and loser. Kshatriya is the term in India for a winner, someone that actually was able to endure life and its blows, and that person had an endurable strength that was going to be used spiritually. And the Kshatriya's goal was to be so strong that they were forced into the path of God realization, handling the whole journey. So it's we have to endure the muck. We have to endure the shit. I feel like crap today. I mean, I do. I feel like crap. As a matter of fact, I had a crazy week. Gianna, my fiance, she had a big event. One of her she's on a webisode and has a bunch of famous people in it. We went to the red carpet event that night and we had a really good time. We were drinking. Shit got crazy that night. People got arrested that night. It was one of those nights where I woke up. We woke up at 10. We went to bed at 4 in the morning, woke up at 10, looked at each other and said, wow, what a fucked up night that was. Holy shit. I mean, it was one of those nights where I'm like, oh, my God, all of a sudden people are being hauled off to prison and all this shit's going on. And we just had this amazing night where, Gianna's webisode coming out was absolutely outstanding. It's going to do amazing. And all of a sudden shit got crazy. I had the worst hangover the next day I had. I actually, for some reason, still feel like I have it. So when you guys were opening the show talking about, liquor, I'm like, wow, interesting.
You're like, ooh.
I would love people to have their own witch liquor. I think it'd be great. Although I'm not much of a drinker, I prefer a little hit of marijuana over alcohol.
High five virtually.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But I'm also not an advocate for anyone abusing any of it. I'm not a fan of I'm the type of, I take one hit before I go in and meditate, and it just opens up the channels a little bit. I will sometimes, on occasion, socially smoke with other people if I like the people a lot. If I don't like people, I don't like being stoned around people I don't like.
Right.
I just don't, because I have no filter. And I ruin parties and say things like, well, if you don't want a serial killer killing you, then don't kill people. It's like, I say, I have the worst sense of humor. And that was, like I said about the left-handed path, I'm like, I'm actually not any path. I'm just for Hecate. But my personality is clearly of the left-handed path. I mean, the shit that makes me laugh, I have an incredibly dark sense of humor. Okay. I mean, incredibly dark. And that's what's that?
No, I was going to say, don't you hate when you get those looks? You think something is fucking hilarious, but it's slightly macabre, and people look at you like, what is wrong with you?
I have that all the
lot.
Time.
Yes.
I have that because I function with both pagans and just your basic normal people of the world, and it was dealing with normal people of the world when I'm like, oh, my God, I am actually really weird. Sorry. And it was through my sense of humor. Like, the things that make me laugh don't make other people laugh. They take very, very serious. But it comes from understanding creation, which gives me a very dark sense of humor. Because, when you really realize that darkness is this force that's trying to create masters, and it can go to some pretty intense lengths to make certain that happens, then a lot of the things end up being, what I see as being really hard and heavy for one person, it's not really that way. It's not that. It's something else. You know, it's like, but I do have, you know, on the other side, I even have a, you know, violent sense of humor. I mean, I witnessed one of my clients, then her child who was autistic, in the room with her as I was giving her a reading, and he got mad and said, "Mom, I want to drill your eyes out." And I had to leave the room. I was laughing so hard. I couldn't believe a kid just told his mom that he was going to drill her eyes out. And looking right at her face, "Mom, I'm going to drill your eyes out." And she goes, "You don't talk to me that way." And I'm like, "Okay, I have to leave this room." I can't believe a kid just said it. And she's as good as a parent as anyone can be on this earth, by the way. She's got a kid that's clearly got a twisted sense of humor, because he looked right in her face with anger and said, "I'm going to drill your eyes out." And I was like, "Oh, I got to leave the room. I'm going to start laughing. I can't help it." Got out, set up to go to the bathroom, laughed. I'm like, "Man, I'm just twisted that way." I mean, and it's not that now if the kid pulled out, you know, a drill and started drilling the eye, I would defend the mom and take the drill out of his hand and say, "Kid, what's wrong with you?" But the larger scheme of things, you learn that the dark things in life are challenging people to become better. And when you understand that thing, then dark things to me are funny. And I laugh at things that people don't really think are funny. And that's where I do like to hang out with certain people, if we have similar sense of humors, because I like to laugh, and things that make me laugh don't make a lot of other people laugh.
My youngest said to me, actually, he said to his brother, who actually is going to be 17 tomorrow, and the youngest is going to be 8 next week. Yeah, you know, well, the 8-year-old says to the 16-year-old, "When mom dies, I'm going to take her body and I'm going to stick it in a closet so I can scare you." And I just lost it. I thought that was the funniest thing. But my husband turned around and he's like, looking at him like, "Why would you do that?" And I'm like, "I think that's funny." You know?
Well, you know, and that is the empathy of when you're in a relationship with someone. Because, you know, if I had a child and the child said, "You know, when you die, Jade, I'm going to keep your body with me," I would laugh. But if he said that to Gianna, I wouldn't really laugh. It would be a little bit different.
Yeah.
It's funny how that maternal, you know, we protect our partners that way. So I would find it humorous if a child said it to me. I wouldn't find it humorous if he said it to Gianna. That would be my take on it. But, you know, I really believe if you just completely remove the belief of good, bad, right, and wrong from your mind and you just look at creation, it's morbid. It's morbid.
Yeah.
And really speaking, even from a past life reincarnation perspective, you know, I mean, and being in India and seeing such active experiences of a person dying and people then gathering around a child and saying, "This is the reincarnation of this person that died there." And not some famous person, just some local person that died in the village. You know, there was this guy in India, and I don't know if I said this story on the show before, and I hope I don't repeat myself, but this guy came to get a blessing from my guru because he was just diagnosed with cancer and walked in the room, and I'm sitting there, and thousands of people would wait to see my guru, and I would just sit there next to him. This guy walks in and says, "I was just diagnosed with cancer. Can you please give me a blessing to save my life?" My guru literally said to him, "No, I won't. You are going to die from this cancer. You will be reborn in Andhra Pradesh. I will see you again in 5 years, but you will be a boy next time I see you."
Wow.
I'm there 5 years later. I was there when that boy walked in. I will never forget that experience as long as I live, and it was one of those completely life-changing experiences.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's name was like Padal Anur or something like that. It's some Indian name. But when the boy came back in, Bao turned his head away from the boy and said the name of that man, and the boy said, "What?" And he looked back at the boy and says, "I've told you I'd see you again." And the boy just looked at him like, "Whoa, this is weird. This is like, I'm like five having a deja vu experience." And I was just like, "Oh, my God." And I looked at the boy, and I'm like, "That is actually him. Oh, but you could actually tell it was the same person." And so when you kind of just witness these types of things and you see them happen a lot, which in India do, then you gotta, you know, your humor is gonna change. Like things that, like, this guy was at my guru's feet pleading for his life. My guru said to him as straight as day, "No, you're gonna die." And I was like, "What? At least say something nice." Like, no, no, no. But you know what he did? He set the whole thing up right there and then. Oh, no, no, I'll see you again. I'm going to see you in 5 years. You're going to die from this, and I'll see you again as a little boy. I was there for a long enough period of time to watch that whole thing transpire, and that's not even the strangest story. I have my own reincarnation story from India, you know, and various things of that nature. And I know people in this life that know me from my last life. And it is the weirdest thing you can ever experience because it shows you how we take shit serious that is not that serious. I mean, things happen, you know, right before I passed on my last life, I said to several people, I just had a dream I'm going to be reborn in the West. Those people, two of them, were waiting for me to come back. As I said, I'd be back. I went right back to that location.
Wow.
Look the same, act the same. I mean, there it's a much deeper story, but it creates too much, you know, I don't want to act like an important human being. That's it. I don't like doing, but oh, I'm so great because I've had this experience. But I do have the greatness to go online and watch me in my past life talk about astrology in India. He was recorded, died in 1963. And I get to go watch myself on YouTube talk about astrology in northern India. And here
that
I am.
That's really so cool. See, but here's the thing. It's not that I don't think it's a story that's about whether or not you're a great, amazing human being. I think it's a story that will give people who still fear death a level of comfort if you would tell it.
Let me tell you then. And I won't use any names, so there's no Googling on YouTube. Okay.
Okay.
This is, and I'm holding my right hand in the air. This is a story that can change your life. And my own mom will validate this story for you.
Wow.
Because she was a part of it. Okay. I started going to India when I was 19. You guys know that.
Yeah.
Family not entirely happy with me going to India at a very young age. Mom didn't get it, especially when I came back with a giant statue of Kali with blood and human heads and all this crazy crap. My mom was like, what the hell has my son got into? And my mom is on my Facebook page. You guys can, you know, send her an email and ask her to verify for you, and she'll tell you exactly what I'm getting ready to tell you. So my mom was like, what the hell is Kali? Why is this going on? I can't believe this is taking place. It just so happens my mom lived in Dana Point, which is about 5 minutes away from one of the biggest Kali temples in the United States. So my mom goes to this Kali temple wanting to learn about what the hell I'm getting into in India, because I was there for long periods of time. I mean, I let go of my family entirely, wasn't calling anymore. I was in India. That's all there was to it. So my mom walks into this room that had a bunch of people on the wall that were devotees of the goddess Kali. Some of them were considered saints in their previous life, some of them not so much so. My mom, not interested in any of these things, not interested in reincarnation, not interested in any of these things like that, a light came out of one of the pictures, and it goes to my mom, goes through my mom, and says, that's your son. My mom collapses. She gets up, goes to the guy that's there and says, you know, I just had this experience. My mom was very shaken up by it and said, I just had this experience where that picture said, that's my son. And the guy said, well, he wasn't your son. He was God realized, which the big mistake that India believes that normal people are God realized. It's a big flaw of India. And the guy says, well, we don't have books on this guy about his life. The only books we have here that he had written were books on astrology. My mom goes, oh, my God, my son's an astrologer. She goes, that's my son. My son is an astrologer. He's been an astrologer since he's 14 years old. Well, anyways, here's the name of this guy. Here are his books. They're all books on astrology. So my mom calls me and says, Jade, get ready for this. I know who you were in your past life. She goes, I went into a Kali temple, and this light came out of a picture of this person and said, that's your son. I know who you are. Meanwhile, I was doing a bunch of past life regression. I didn't touch this, by the way, so I didn't believe it at all. I was working with a past life regressionist on my most recent life, and it was not this astrologer in India. It was someone else which now as I'm an adult, it doesn't make shit for sense that I was focusing on that life. But anyways, I'm like, okay, what's going on here is that my mom needs to go to India with me. And I'm in my heart of hearts, I'm like, this is my mom. She's having an experience. She needs to go to India with me. I said, Mom, I don't believe I'm that person. I'm going to tell you who I think I was, this other person, da-da-da-da. And she's like, I'm not having spiritual experience in this life. It's not me. A light came out of a picture and said, that's your son. That's all I'm saying. I said, Mom, it's your birthday next month. I'm buying you a ticket to India. That's what this is about. You're going to India with me. I want you to see what I'm into.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my first trip to India, I went to a very specific place. Didn't really meet a lot of people. I got overwhelmed with India. I had some pretty powerful experience, but I didn't meet a lot of people. Now, my mom, having a Christian upbringing, that's why she didn't believe any of these things, I found out about a guru named Bhau, B-H-A-U, and he talked a lot about Christ. So my goal was I'm going to take my mom, when she's in India, to a guy in India, a guru that talks about Christ. Oh, my God, that's exactly what I'm doing. The only time he gave a seminar was right the day we were arriving, means we had to get off a 24-hour flight and get on a bus and go right to his seminar. I mean, and it's excruciating because when you get off a 24-hour flight, you do not want to get on a car and go. It just we didn't have any other options. So we get in this bus and we drive down to where Bhau is, which was outside of Pune. Bao's giving a speech in front of probably about 700 people, most of them Indian. Most of this seminar was in Hindi, which was a little bit disturbing to me because I read all about this stuff before we got there. I was hoping that he would make references in English. But anyways, we're late. His seminar started. We run in the door, me and my mom, that's it. Bhau looks at me and my mom as we walk in, and Bhau looks at me and says, Swami so-and-so just walked in this room. My mom collapses because it's the person my mom said that I was. Bhau stops the whole thing. Bhau stops the whole thing and says, let me tell you a story. He looks at me and goes, I was on my way to see you in 1962. Because I was on my way to see you, and my guru, Mayor Baba, said, you will not go see him. And he goes, why? And he said, because you're more advanced than him. He's going to die pretty soon, reincarnate in the West, and come back as your disciple. So don't go see him. You will see him again. He was sitting in this room waiting for me. I walked in the room and was like, oh, there he is. I became his disciple right there and then, and he became my guru. That's it.
Wow.
And that was it. And he told the story, and he used the name, and people were, oh, my God, he was Swami so-and-so. You know, he was an astrologer in northern India. It was a person that was an Ayurvedic doctor and an astrologer, and he went to Malaysia to fight cholera. And he took his wife and one child to Malaysia to fight cholera, and the first week he got there, both his wife and his child died of cholera. He was so devastated, he tried to kill himself by not eating, ended up at a guru in northern India, and the guru said, you were meant to come here. Further later, bring Gianna into the mix. That was Gianna in my life right before. And Bhau, my guru, confirmed that. No, I was looking for her right after I got you. We just pick up where we left off. That's all we do when we die. Heavens and hells both exist. They're just temporary states in between incarnations. Heavens are the lokas, and heaven is a very personal thing. We get the mother. We get a very Halloweenish type of experience after that's incredibly blissful. Hell only exists for people who hurt other people, and it's where they go to have their karma balanced out. It's not punishment. They get their karma balanced out so their next life they have a chance to have a normal life, even if they've done really bad things. So it's a justice. But nevertheless, when we take births, we just go right back to where we started. And so anyways, yeah, my mom came back and was like, wow. You know, my mom started the whole damn thing. And it was she was the very first one that said, you are this. I denied the whole thing, said this was a whole thing just to get you to India. The whole thing was a setup. He was setting the whole thing up, my guru was, to get me right to him so we could begin, pick up where we were just getting ready to start life before. And sure enough, this is what's happened. This is the whole experience, all the way up into his death, which was last year. You know, mm-hmm. And so the whole Leela of life, we take the thing so damn serious. Oh, this person died. Oh, my God, it's this, it's that. It's just life. We pick up right where we left off. And the people we love, we stay with. The people we love,
yeah.
We stay with. And it's just, it's called a tribe, a lineage, a family.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do even sometimes with families that we're born into. It's the great lineage,
yeah.
You know. So these things are a part of, and here I am, and what is the most crazy of all experiences is reading my books from my past life, and I finished, before I had picked up his books, I had finished something that he started. I had no
wow.
idea, never read his books in my life. I came up with very personal conclusions of astrology. They were very like, I could tell I had started something in my past life. I finished it in this life. Assyrian astrology is its completion. It didn't start in this life. It started life right before. I mean, the translation of the Yevon Ejitake, yes, my system is just a, I did not create the system. But my version of it and westernizing it, he started that. He started
wow.
westernizing Hindu astrology and all the stuff I'm doing now. So we just, you don't lose anything by dying. You don't. You know, it's like great poet Rumi says, you know, the worm dies, the next life becomes a rodent. And then a rodent dies, becomes a bird. The bird dies, becomes this. And then we just keep evolving because I never lost from dying. You know, it's like we just take death so damn serious because we
yep.
don't understand it when we just keep evolving. There is a point, though,
yeah.
where that evolution is done and it's finished. That is what getting realized is all about. It's about finishing and you becoming that one force in creation that you were when you started. You just go back to it consciously. And all these little, you know, that's why even like in certain religions where they only emphasize one birth and one death, my
mm-hmm.
Guru Bao would concur with that. He would say, yes, there's one birth, you descended in creation, and there's only one day that you leave it. All these lives in between are just the same thing as you putting on different clothes from day after day. He goes,
huh.
You put on one set of clothes one day, and you put on another set. He goes, it doesn't mean you died. He goes, you just put on a different set of clothing. He goes, that's just what your body is. He goes, your spirit comes once, and it ends once. See, so my guru didn't care whether people believe in reincarnation or not. He said, you come in once, you leave once. He goes, the truth of the matter is, it takes millions of lives to get there. But if someone doesn't want to believe that, that's fine.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
See, I love that. That's brilliant and good to hear and comforting. And that's why I really wanted you to tell the story again, because it is comforting to hear that.
Yeah, and it was one of those experiences where I went from being this musician in a rock band, then getting a host of really bad health problems from
mm-hmm.
being mixed diagnosed with an enlarged heart to developing chronic fatigue syndrome. All of these things were just my path coming. That's all it was. And I
mm-hmm.
needed to take a step out of music for that time in my life and go to India. And this other part of me just kind of stepped in and this awakening had taken place. But there were things that I did even as a person before I got to India that when I got to India, I only saw Indians do, and I did it when I was in Arizona. I was fascinated with walking barefoot when I was a kid. I mean, all the way
uh-huh.
through high school. I was called leather feet because I could walk downtown, walk to the beach. When it was 110 outside in Arizona, I never wore shoes. Ever.
Mm-hmm.
The village I was in my last life, no one wore shoes. I went there and everyone walked around their bare freaking feet. And I'm like, oh my God, that's just a memory. I hate shoes. I can't stand shoes. I, to this day, hate shoes. I'm wearing sandals
Me
right
too.
Now.
That's
Me an Indian
too.
Trait.
Oh my God.
That's an Arabian Indian trait where people don't wear them. It's very, well, now they do, but, you know, 20, 30 years ago and before, there was a very specific type of thin sandal that was worn, and that was it.
Wow.
So we don't die, you know, even though our bodies, it's just like changing clothes. That's all it is. I mean, when your clothes get dirty, you change them. That's when this body gets old and it's kind of collected too much energy, and we remove it and put on another set of clothing. And in between states, most of us get a very nice experience of going into that god or goddess that we are for a while. And that's what it is in between here. We just kind of move into what we are without the body. And that's it. And the only way, you know, and people, you know, and also a lot of people talk about hell being invented by Christianity and stuff like that. It drives me crazy when I hear that. It is so much older. Hindus have their version that goes on 5,000 years prior to the time of the Bible, called
really?
The Rock. And it was just a place of justice where people would go if they hurt other people. It's the only way you can go down is harming other people. Like the river Styx that runs through Tartarus was where souls burned if they hurt people. And Hecate runs that damn thing. You know, so whatever experience I had where Hecate comes up in smoke and she's fire and she's like, okay, she just came from Styx. So when you were talking about Styx and things like that, that was hell. That Christian version of hellfire, that's the river Styx, where people go when they hurt other people. And that was known in Greek mythology. It just wasn't called hell. But a lot of these people who say that the only Christians invented hell, it's so much older than that. Buddhism talks about hell and Narak. And, you know, but most people, if you just do the best you can, you don't even have to be good. All you have to do is try to be the best person you can be, and you don't even have to be the best. You just have to try. You have a nice afterlife when you're done.
Awesome.
That's really nice to hear, too.
Yeah, you don't even have to, my guru would say, you don't even have to be good. You just have to, just don't harm anybody. He would say Wiccan rules all the time, but not ever saying them. Like, you know, karma comes back to you threefold. You know, don't harm anybody. Just don't harm people. He would say things like that. I'm like, oh, my God. So when I started coming from India into Wicca, boy, a lot of things made sense. Like, harm no one. That's my only rule. Well, don't harm anybody. I heard that in India through various gurus and saints.
See, mine, I'm of the volition, to steal a little quote from Dorothy Morrison, harm no one but take no shit. You know, because if you let other people harm you, you're harming yourself. You know, and that I don't know if
that's defending yourself,
I'm half Italian and half Scottish.
Well, you know, if you're defending yourself, that's not really harming someone, and also being truthful with someone. If you're bluntly truthful with someone and that harms them, that's their problem. It's not yours. You know, and you're allowed to. You know, in India, it's called you can be a cobra and you can hiss, but just don't bite. You know, it's like that's a philosophy: is hiss, don't bite. If you bite, then you bound yourself to that karma of that situation, and there has to be a repercussion of that. But you're allowed to hiss.
Uh-huh.
You're allowed to defend
yourself.
You are allowed to protect yourself.
Wow.
That's awesome. Now, Raina and I, you know, I don't know, I think you know, that, you know, we're not blood related, but the minute I met her, I was like, you're one of mine, and you are mine. I know you. You know, and I think it was kind of mutual. It was, because I never hid my books from her. You know, and I had plenty of, you know, witchcraft books. You know, I have a plethora, actually a shelf that she gave me at one point holds all my books, most of them anyway. They're kind of overflowing. But the second I saw her, I was like, I said to my husband, I was like, she's one of mine. I'm telling you right now, she's one of mine. You know, and she kind of felt the same thing, but we really never said it to each other. It was just kind of like one day I think I just said something, and she was like, oh, my God, you're a witch. And I'm like, yeah, aren't you? It's like we know each other when we meet back up.
That's real family. You know, as they would say also in India, there's an infinite ocean of light that we all came from and we all go back to. But like a normal ocean, there are shores and there are different lands that connect, and there are different parts of the ocean which we are connected to. So if you are a part of that same part of the ocean, it's called family. It's tribe. You stay with those people. And you just keep going.
Yeah.
And, you know, people always, I've had one person say, I don't believe in past lives because I don't really remember them. I'm like, oh, yes, you do. Trust me. I mean, why was I interested in astrology when I was 12? I didn't have any astrological influence around me. Why was I into it? It's a memory. Our interests are our memories. what we're interested in and what we like and what we do not like are all connected to our memory bank. We absolutely remember our past lives. And really speaking, you know, I don't really remember 2 weeks ago. I don't know what the hell happened.
Yeah, really.
Thank God I have enough images around me to remind me of what happened 2 weeks ago, because I would forget. I don't really remember a lot. And in spiritual terms, we call it positive forgetfulness. As you evolve, you kind of forget. So the fact that I don't remember all the experiences of my previous life, well, I don't really remember being 10 much either. You know,
right.
I remember because there's pictures there to remind me of it. But as you evolve, you do forget. And so it's a natural part of procession and incarnations to kind of forget certain details, but your heart never forgets what it loved, ever. It stays with what it loves. But what you polarize against, you have to become. Meaning, you know, the reason why, this is another funny thing about that life I was just telling you about, I had many times cried literally in India going, I cannot believe I'm a Westerner in this life. Why, I love India. I feel at home in India. I feel India. I act Indian. Why was I born in India? My guru said, you hated Westerners.
Oh.
And I did.
Oh,
and then I read
that
some of his books.
Does that mean I'm going to come back as a Christian?
Yes, so don't hate them. That's why I purposely talk about most things, not everything. Because
then you
actually connect yourself consciously right to it. You know, like, and using, you know, especially, you know, like the gays, the straights, and all that stuff like that, you know, just be open and love everybody. It doesn't mean you have to like everything, by the way. I'm not talking about liking everything. There are certain things that I personally don't like, you know, but I'm happy that it exists and happy that it's out there. You know, if someone says, hey, I like ketchup and hot dogs, and someone says, oh, well, I like hamburgers and, you know, cheese. It's like, you don't get mad at the other person for liking something different than you. That's stupid. So we have to learn to love and embrace each other. It doesn't mean we have to like the same things that people like. You know, it's like, I am here.
Good.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like, I like using the gay and the straight thing because, really speaking, when someone really polarizes against something, I already know that's where they're going. If they're polarized, they can say, you know what, someone can say it's not my thing, you know, personally, not attracted to men, just not. Don't really have an interest in it. But I will go and support the gays 100% and make certain they get all their rights. We don't have to really enjoy the same things to be supportive. We don't. Gay pride was right in front of me. I walked all the way down there with him. It's not my preference, though. We are allowed to have different preferences and still get along and be happy. I think it's pathetic when people identify too heavy with something, but that's, you know, a very interesting thing is it's important not to overly identify with something because you don't know where you're going to end up. If you completely say, I am this, and you stay rigid with it, I get concerned with that because I believe the person's going to start experiencing the opposite pretty soon. You know, it's kind of like I knew someone growing up, and he was, I am into Satan. I love the devil. He was in a death metal band, and blah, blah, blah. He's a Christian now. And he had it coming. You could tell he had it coming. His level of, it wasn't real. It was just, be open to everything. You know, you can be straight in one life, gay your next. You can also be gay in one life and straight your next. You know, and matter of fact, the more you overly identify with something, the more likely you are to experience its opposite. So in order to be true to yourself, you had to kind of limit the amount of, identification you have with yourself and live in preferences, not strong likes and dislikes, because you will go the opposite way. So that's why in India it's like lighten up, have your likes and dislikes in the form of preferences.
Right.
You know, it's like I could say, hey, I prefer this over that. But if I said, I hate this and I love that, then you're going to go into its opposite form your next life. And so it's good just to be light with your preferences. And I am core things that I feel that are just core in my being. And because I want them to sustain, I lighten up my preferences. Because if I get hardcore with them, I have to go in the opposite route.
Okay. No, so you have to just be light. That makes sense. that makes total sense. It, you know, and it's not that, I mean, please don't think I hate Christians. I don't hate anyone. I think hate is too strong of an emotion. And personally, for the most part, I just don't give a shit. You know, but when it comes to certain views, like, you know, when they're picking on my gay friends or family, yeah, I will get my dander up in a fucking hurry.
That's okay.
You know,
and that's just being protective. I don't think that's really,
yeah.
I mean, wanting people to love, I mean, because really there are stages you go through, and there is a stage where we all have to go through, and I'm at this stage, and I'll tell you the stage I'm at, which a lot of evolved people are. You know, mother, please help me to let go of being judgmental towards the judgmental.
Yes.
And that is my biggest problem. I become judgmental towards judgmental people. When somebody starts judging someone, I'm like, you know what? Then I start judging them, and it's a very tough stage to get out because
mm-hmm.
I can't stand when people start judging other people. It drives me crazy. Yet then I become judgmental towards them. But I'm at the stage of please help me to forgive the judgmental because that's where I'm at. I still don't have it. Like, when people start judging other people, it pisses me off, and it still creates a reaction out of me, which means I'm not entirely clear from it yet.
Well, then, you know, I think I may have to start working on that. Because, that will set me off in a heartbeat.
And, you know, I'm
like,
a big fan of martial arts and boxing, you know, and when there's two boxers in a ring and one of them has a cross tattooed on his back, I'm like, oh, God, I hope that guy gets his ass kicked. I still have that.
I do, too.
I still have that.
Every
I go
time.
For the opposite. And but at the same time, it's a preference. It's a preference.
Yeah.
It's just a preference. I don't want to get heavy with that. And you know, one of my favorite fighters said, God bless, at the end. I was like, oh, God, no. But yet, he's still going to stay my favorite fighter. He's still going to stay my favorite fighter.
Pacquiao? Yeah.
I'm referring
I'm
more
sure
to MMA.
Him, but.
Yeah, but I'm actually now in – I know an MMA fighter who's doing extremely well right now. But he did say at the end of one of his fights that he won recently, God bless, and he even said Jesus. I was like, oh, God, no. But, yes, the truth of the matter is he is going to stay my favorite fighter.
I would like to thank
a light
Jesus
preference.
Christ for letting me kick this guy's ass.
Absolutely.
I mean, pretty much. What it comes down to. Or if you lose, Jesus, why'd you make me lose? What's up with that?
Well, you know, there's
a
lot of that going on. I'm telling you, like the Tim Tebow, the people that profess greatness, people don't like that. Even humanity as a whole doesn't like that. He can't even find a job right now.
Yeah,
Tim Tebow
can't
find a job because no one wants him.
And it's kind of sad. I feel bad for the kid. You know, he had some talent. He kind of, you know, because I you know, actually Raina watches as well, but, you know, we're both football fans. You know,
oh my!
It's like, yes, yeah, go Panthers.
Nice.
But it's like, yeah, I kind of felt bad, and oh my God, I just looked at the time. We've got like almost less than 2 minutes. but regardless, you know, I feel bad for the kid. You know, if that's the way he wants to live his life, that's awesome. But it's not going to go over well in the public.
Professing.
It's just not.
Saying that God helps you win games, no, that doesn't work. Because even other Christians,
that's
believe it or not, they were mad at him. Other Christians were like, "Hey, listen, I don't think God makes me win games. Come on, guy, you know."
Yeah.
It was a little bit intense.
War in the Middle East, your little fucking game doesn't mean that much right now. I'm just saying. I mean, really.
Exactly.
Other shit to deal with. You guys play.
And we are down to a minute. God, it always goes so fast. I hate that.
I know.
See, now that's the only thing I hate is time passage. There we go.
That's right. Well, as normal, I will be back on again.
Yay! We can't wait. We love you. Thank you for coming on and inciting your knowledge, you know, just laying it on us. We love it.
Love you guys, and I will be talking to you guys again very, very soon.
Absolutely.
Like in three minutes.
That's right.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
Have a wonderful night.
You too. Bye now.
All right. Bye, honey.
All right. And I'm gonna say great blessings. You wanna say anything, sis?
No. Fuck it. I'm tired. I love you guys.
All right. We love you guys. We will see you next week with Dorothy Morrison, and we will have Jade Soul Luna on soon. And we will see you. Sayonara. Bye.
Bye.